What happens if we experience and express all of our emotions, thoughts, and body feelings as love instead of continually searching to receive love? I'm your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, love mentor and relationship healer, somatic body psychotherapist, and health and wellness coach, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me book series, the romantic novel Love in the Blizzard of Life, and creator of Healing Through Love seminars, Love Lessons for the Soul, and several virtual summit packages, one going on right now called Miraculous Healing. And our speaker today has had his own miraculous healing and came out with some real wisdom that you don't want to miss. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. And in every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who keep proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and beyond. Robert O. Williams was an accomplished saxophone player. His dedication and talent led him to his dream job of touring with the Beach Boys. But when a physical disability eventually prevented him playing his beloved instrument for extended periods of time, he rekindled his childhood connection with and his search for spirituality. His music had brought him the sense of waves of pure heart love that led him to discover transcendental meditation, and he will tell us much more about that. Nearly dying multiple times, the communication with his guru and revelations of sacred geometry and travel through several dimensions led to his quantum code technology. In his book, Love is the Power, and in his simple Heart Plus app, his goal is to create more heart-driven humans. And we certainly need that in our society today. So it's with great pleasure that I welcome you today, Robert O. Williams.
Thank you, Dr. Erica. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
So I would love, and I'm sure the audience would love to hear about your background, education, training, what you were doing, and then what caused this huge change in your thinking and got you involved with transcendental meditation?
My background is quite unusual, in the sense that I haven't heard the story too many times, but I'm sure it's not completely unique. I grew up seeing things other people couldn't see from as far back as I can remember. So I saw little beings in the gardens and auras and different colors around people, especially in the woods and in we have a forest here that has a lot of big redwood trees. I would just be completely lost in their world, and so I had that going on. The difficulty was to integrate that into what other people were seeing or what they weren't seeing. But that just gives you a little idea.
I have a question here. Did you ever share that with anybody? And how did they react?
I did it. Yeah. And, of course, they thought, well, when I was really young, it was just the little boy's imagination. And everybody just allowed me to have those stories. But as I got older, then I was considered, they got very concerned. My parents and my aunt and others got concerned, so they took me to different doctors. And very, very fortunately for me, they said I wasn't mentally retarded and that they just wrote it off as a vivid imagination and let me be. But I stopped sharing those because it would upset, stop sharing the stories. Or what I was seeing, because it upset everybody, yeah.
Wow. So just continue with your story a bit. You said you nearly died several times. Well, talk about your life as a musician and then what happened after that.
The reason why I became a musician, it is linked to this odd childhood. When I was in nature, and you can say when I was free just to be with the nature spirits and the beauty of nature, I had a certain feeling. I felt very free and a lightness of being. I felt my heart was expanding. Now, these are all in hindsight. I didn't have those terms when I was a boy, but I'll talk about them now with those terms. When there was a certain point where one particular being that was around me a lot, nature spirit or a higher elemental, said that he had to leave and he couldn't see me anymore. And so I wrote about that in my book, and after he left, I felt this vacancy. I felt very sad. But then I discovered that same lightness of being, that same freedom, playing my saxophone and piano. Not all the time, but during certain times of playing my sax, I would feel the same kind of freedom and the same kind of lightness of being. And so I began really playing my saxophone as much as I could. I listened to music. I'd also feel it occasionally by listening to music. So that's what got me into music, I can say. And that lightness of being, I believe, happens when we get out of our own way. And when we're playing an instrument, most musicians have felt that point where you and your instrument are not separated. You've practiced enough, you've memorized enough, and now it's just about music. And there's your body, your breath, all those things just merge into one experience. And that's the lightness, that's the freedom of creativity that is similar to our connection with nature and our connection with ourselves through our hearts. So I know I'm jumping ahead with some of these concepts, but I played my saxophone for many, many years, and then went to college. And if you want, I can go into that near death. But that was in basic my the way I grew up.
Well, and a lot of people don't have those little companions or that awareness of spirits. But in a sport activity, like I have felt it in tennis, I even once felt it in chess, but I had smoked a little pot at that moment, so it wasn't natural, but I had that moment of clarity, of connection. And I have felt that in sports, and many people feel it, and in art. There's many ways to reach that state. And it's also been described as a state of flow.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry. That's what we're talking about. And it's technically a function of the heart chakra. It's a function of where you can use your mind to remember certain things, like I remembered how to play a certain scale and so forth. But then the heart is able to transcend and include what we've learned, but to transcend that linear way that we're used to living, reacting and going after something or running away from something, and being in that flow or being in the present moment and with our past knowledge of whatever we're doing, integrate the two and live a fully creative moment. And that's actually one of the amazing gifts of this time on Earth, is that there's a certain amount of integration that has never before been available to us. Integration by the ability of the heart and the other chakras. We can talk about what that means, but the integration of those as our own beingness in each moment. And it's a powerful, powerful, powerful force. And in fact, I have a theory that if we have even a small percentage of people on this planet functioning from that level, it will affect the entire population, and it will affect it by relieving some of the deep wounds that we all carry as humans, and actually unleashing some of the potential of the heart to harmonize, to forgive, to love, and not allowing bad things to happen. But actually, it goes even deeper to disallow those thoughts to even enter consciousness in the first place. And once we reach a certain level, first step is that somebody might have a thought of doing something cruel or hurtful. The first step is that they don't act on that thought. The second step is that the thoughts don't even enter, and so there is no possibility of cruelty or suffering. So I know I'm, again, jumping way ahead, but it happens.
No, but I'd like to add something here.
Yeah.
That there was a theory of the 100th monkey that I don't know if you've ever heard of that. That the monkeys in one area learned something, and then when it reached a critical mass, they say 100, the monkeys in another area learned the same thing. And we know that our bodies are made up of electrical energy and waves and frequency. So when we alter our own frequency, it affects the frequencies of other people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the work by Professor Rupert Sheldrake confirms with some of his experiments that, first of all, we're not isolated beings. And yes, if a certain percentage of beings or humans reach a certain level of consciousness, it will affect the whole, that quote-unquote 100th monkey phenomenon, the morphogenic field he talks about. It's a very real thing, and it's a very, let's just say, we're lucky that it is one of the laws of nature, because to educate every single human being, the morals of a higher level of existence would be unfathomable. But this way, these tendencies naturally fall away. The bad habits actually naturally fall away. And that's where that's the time we're in, and that's where we're headed.
And it doesn't look like it right now, because what's happening in the news is we're seeing negative images, murders in schools and all over the place. And that is spreading, because consciousness spreads.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And we are seeing that in the news, and we are disturbed by it. So there's a couple of things. One is that prior to any kind of mass transformation, and let's take an example that we can relate to in our everyday lives. We know that if we plant our rose garden seeds, it starts out at a bunch of seeds go under the ground, and then in some miraculous moment, the seed bursts open and becomes a sprout. And then the sprout finds its way to burst through the level of soil, and it turns into a stem and onward like that. And now, the reason why I love this analogy, or love this phenomenon, it's a real thing, is that the sprout looks a lot different from the seed. This stem is a lot different from the sprout. The leaves are a lot different from the stems, the thorns, and then the flower itself, the rose flower itself, is completely different, almost 100% different than the previous stages. Prior to each one of these transformations, here's the point, prior to each one of the transformations between one state of the rose to another, there's an increase of disorder. There's an increase, it's not an analogy, it's an actual cellular phenomenon that the cells become very disordered, very chaotic. Some of them don't make it. They run down the side of the stem as sap. So it's how nature works. When there is an approaching transformation, there's an increase of chaos. There's an increase of disorder to begin to break the boundaries of the existing paradigm, to break the boundaries of the existing phase, and there is instability, because if there was continued stability, then that new phase, that new manifestation of the potential, could not manifest. So, a couple of things. So we see the increase of chaos and a lot of the things going on. But there's another thing I want to add, though, is that there is a kind of an addiction in mass consciousness to that which is negative, that which is seeming to, the horror of humanity, or the horror, you know, why are we so interested in all the different murders? And we don't want to ignore them. We don't want to say they're not there. But there is some kind of a dark shadow side that is attracted to those phenomena. And we should just occasionally say, do I really need to know all the details of this murder? Do I really need to know all the details of this tragedy? Because generally we don't. It's a way in which our separate egos and our separateness can be, it actually strengthens that separateness. And what we want to do is, when we have that sense of, oh my God, we're just kind of fixated to the TV or to whatever somebody's saying in a gossip way or some negative information, is to say, what am I thinking? What am I feeling? What's happening? Put that awareness in that dialogue of yourself, and then if possible or when possible, just come back to your heart and think of the things that are beautiful. Think of the things that, in the middle of this chaos, there is love. And that is actually what often happens when you're right there on the in a tragedy. If there's been a flood or a terrible fire, people then that are wanting to help, people automatically want to help their neighbors. There's probably very few exceptions, but in general, if people are not so numbed out in their humanity, without even thinking, they'll rush in, they'll help people, they'll band together, and that is a quality of love that has always been there inside of us. And unfortunately, sometimes it only comes out in tragic situations where people band together and love each other, even though they don't know who the other person is. But it is always there. That's the love. Yeah.
I'd like to get back for a moment for you to share with us about what it was like. How did you enter into these near-death experiences, and what happened, and what did you discover from that?
I grew up in a area of toxins, and so I was kind of a sickly child. When I became a musician, I was ill all the time. I was young, and when you're young, you just kind of ignore some of the signs. But I had been playing with the Beach Boys for a couple years, living in this beautiful place where Mike Love of the Beach Boys lived in Santa Barbara, and just kept getting sicker and sicker, and the doctors didn't know what was happening. I'm 6'3" and 180 pounds, and I just kept losing weight. I was down to less than 110 pounds or something, 105, 106 pounds.
Wow.
Just couldn't digest anything. Very, very weak. A lot of pain, a lot of misery. Going to the doctors, everyone I could possibly go to, none of them could figure me out. And at one point, one of the doctors said that I had to go to the hospital because if I kept degressing, as he had observed, that I would be dead in 6 months, or that I wouldn't last more than 6 months. So he said, we got to get you under full-time observation. And at that moment, Dr. Eric Kay was kind of a strong intuition to not go to the hospital. And so I chose to just trust in the universe. I had learned about Eastern philosophies and life after death and different worlds, I'd seen other things. So I didn't want to really struggle to try to find out. Well, I had been struggling, so I just gave up that struggle. One morning I was stumbling to the bathroom and I fell over, and immediately there was a sense of, there wasn't a sense of being in my body. There was a sense of being outside of my body, looking down, seeing my body on the bathroom floor, and realizing that either I had already died or I was dying. And this was the pivotal moment, because of my previous experience in life, I wasn't afraid. I didn't freak out. And I said, if this be it, this be it. And at that moment, it was all light. Everything turned to light. It wasn't me in the light, it was just light. Then there was a little bit of a change. There was just a little bit of an ego, or a little bit of an I that separated from the light. And so now it was the light and this subjective state of consciousness. At that point, I then realized that I was either going to go back into my body or go back into the light in these perhaps higher dimensions. There was a choice given to me, and I asked if I had a purpose. The answer was yes. And so this started a very fascinating set of experiences. I was in the light, and now I had accepted made the choice to come back to my physical body. And I began to slowly, you could say, descend. And I saw various dimensions of existence, various states of reality. And I write extensively about those in my book. But just briefly, we are not alone, and there's areas of existence that includes angelic beings and our guides and beautiful, beautiful things. One of the coolest parts of that experience was when I finally got back in my body, and there's this kind of, between each little state, there's like a gap where everything blacks out and I'm unconscious, and then I wake up and there's this different dimension. So finally I'm in my body and kind of like waking up but from sleep, but a lot more profound. Wiggled my toes, my heart had started beating, my breath was going, and I was in Santa Barbara living in this beautiful area, and I remember hearing the birds chirping outside, the sound of the ocean in the distance, and the wind, and the insect sounds, and all of it, the nature, the sounds of nature, and it was so, so beautiful, and so, there was not difference between that loving force of intelligence that was behind the bird songs and behind the sounds of nature, and just realizing this cosmic play of change, but harmonious change and interplay of differences that didn't threaten each other. It was a paradise for me, and I remember feeling that this planet has the potential to be, you could say, at least a place that is functioning without suffering, without pain, without cruelty, and in a state of harmony. I felt that, and I later researched that potential more. But in my own case, I felt one with nature. There wasn't a separation. And when we think of it, our bodies come out of the earth, come out of the same, under the same laws of nature that are always at play. These laws are very, very intelligent. Nobody knows, no scientist can ever emulate how a seed changes into a sprout. But those laws of nature make sure enough of those seeds go into sprouts for a certain phase of the garden and so forth. So I lived that paradise for 2 or 3 minutes, and then the pain came back, my head hurt, and this and that. But, of course, I was changed. And one of the things that I one of the realities, the dimensions that I saw coming back into my body was a dimension full of symbols and mandalas and beautiful ratios of angular ratios and colorful art, you could say. I wrote as many of those down that I could remember in my journals. I still have those journals. So within 10 minutes of cleaning up my mess, I wrote down everything that I remembered, including those mandalas, those star-like geometric pictures, and they later became important for me. But I cleaned up, and I decided to retire from the music business. I was only 25 years old, but I had now a purpose, and it didn't feel like going back into just simply playing my saxophone. So that changed my life. That was in March of 1979.
Wow. And so then how did you find the Maharishis and Transcendental Meditation?
I actually, yeah, that was before that. When I was in college, the third year of college, my jaw began to hurt really, really, really bad, and especially when I was playing my saxophone. And to make a long story short, I finally got to a clinic where they would study the jaw, the temporomandibular clinic in Berkeley, California, TMJ, and they found that there was a deformity there in my jaw, and it happened because I fell off my bicycle when I was 7 years old and broke my jaw there, and it didn't heal up properly. So here I was, third year of college, really good on my sax, really good musician, had my whole life planned out for me to be a musician and go on the road and then settle down, teach music, get married and have 5 kids. It was all there in my consciousness. And when they said I had to give up my saxophone, because my jaw was going into spasm and locking, and I couldn't open my mouth, and oh, it was horrible. They just said, "Well, you know, there's no cure for this. There's no operation we can do. You just have to give up your saxophone because that's how you play the position of your jaw, and just, you know, play guitar or something." And that was devastating for me. I was third year. My recitals were coming up. I was booked 6 months in rock and roll bands and jazz bands. So I felt that something very precious to me had been taken away. You know, I was very depressed and suicidal. And I discovered Transcendental Meditation. I earlier spoke about the lightness of being, that freedom in the moment that I felt growing up with the nature spirits in the backyard and then with music. It wasn't until I discovered Transcendental Meditation that I re-engage with that state of consciousness that is free in the moment, that's light. I don't know how else to describe it. It's just this momentary, it's a moment-by-moment presence. So TM, not every single time, but TM allowed me to experience that again, and I began to meditate and still meditate to this day.
Well, you're kind of showing us that we really do have a purpose in this life, and it may not be what we think it is, because so many people have had their life going in one direction, and then there's an accident or something that happens, and they can no longer do that thing, and if they keep following their purpose, they get into something really valuable. And you found the power of love. And I talk about love. That's my focus in life, a love mentor. So I'm excited to hear how you discovered that.
When I was, so let me just hop right to the early 80s. And my sickness, later it was, I was massively poisoned, all kinds of poisons and toxins in my body. And I had had the near-death experience where came back in the nature sounds, But this was even more dramatic in the sense that the physical pain was so overwhelming, and the loss, the sense of loss, or the reality of losing everything was my case. And what I began to experience was a letting go into the pain, a letting go of an attachment to outcome. And it's looking at the different ways our minds work. Either our minds are trying to analyze something based on the past, or trying to get something, a projection in the future. And when we become aware that we have this mental predisposition, we can actually allow the mind to just be there. And that awareness, which is bigger than the mind, can govern. And the awareness that is there just simply allows the mind. I started to allow my mind to have any thought without participating in those thoughts. I allowed my emotions, deep, deep sorrow, deep, deep emoting, just continue to surrender any motive to change those emotions. So this is another, you know, it is love when we completely and unconditionally accept something in the moment. That's unconditional love. If we were loving, if we love with an expectation or with a desire to change something, then the love is conditional. And that's fine. There's moments for that. That's part of the range of possibilities. Desire something, fulfill it, we achieve something, we move on. I'm not against that at all. It's how we live. But there is also a moment in some of our lives where no matter what we do, we can't change things. It doesn't seem that way anyway. So this is when I began to learn this sequence, which I call love, devotion, and surrender. So loving, which was, okay, I just am all that stuff. I'm just going to accept it. Just going to accept it. Kind of holding my own self like a mother with her newborn infant. There's no agenda there. There's just love. And then there's devotion, which is a kind of a surrendering of the I know what's going on, or I don't know what's going on, or the I-ness in the state of the devotion. And usually your head drops automatically because the devotion uses different chakras. So it's very, very fascinating. So then the last step is surrender, which is let thy will be done. And so as I began to love my situation, accept it, love doesn't mean liking it. I didn't like it at all. But it was complete acceptance. And then devotion and surrender. Then things would begin automatically to miraculously happen. And you are about that, Dr. Erica, and your work. It is surrendering
Thank
to this
you.
Higher... This higher state of grace, every moment we have access to that. Every single moment we have access. Our bodies, as you say here, are miraculously designed, optimally functioning, and a perfect healing machine. And this, you don't say, but we have to learn how to do that. We have to earn it. We have to burn all of our karma to get it. No. Our bodies are miraculously designed and optimally functioning and a perfect healing machine. Love is the pathway to unleashing those miracles. Love, the acceptance of what is unconditionally. And that then becomes a state of consciousness. We are loving without fear. And we talked about the 100th monkey. So in our own consciousness, our own bodies, if we have just a small, you could say a small percentage of our own consciousness in that state of unconditional love, miracles will happen. It's the secret formula. Miracles will happen. They don't happen often exactly how our minds want them to happen. but they'll happen. And it's how we are released from the bondage of this time that we're in, where there is suffering and where there is cruelty. I believe we're going to move out of that time of humanity. In the meantime, this is the way. And your website is so full of it, and your teachings are so, so important, because wounds are deep and pain is deep and our tears are flowing. And it's time for the heart. It's time for that power of love. And we
and
will.
That is so beautiful. I've also,
yes.
I wanted to add, sorry to interrupt, I also wanted to add how sad I feel, even for the perpetrators, because I see these broken human beings that got shamed and, you know, got found out and shamed, but they're coming from a broken place inside.
You know, I have a daughter, and I'm very protective of her. She's 12 years old. She's going to the sixth grade. There was a bulletin that went out about bullying. And you know, nobody likes to be bullied, and bullying is bad. And, the bullies are bad people. And I'm saying that now sarcastically, because there has to be love involved with those children who feel that they have to bully to get attention or to release something. I'm not saying, you know, allow bullying. I'm saying to what you said, suggested, is that somebody needs to love those kids. Somebody needs to go in there and hold them and tell them they're okay. It's not their fault. And that they are just as deserving of love as anyone. And I believe that that is the way we're going to, especially at the level of our children growing up, there needs to be love sessions. And I don't want to sound too crazy. Love doesn't have to be just singing and hugging. It can be, it's not that. Love is a state of consciousness that when we're in it, as our actions are inspired, we will heal others. We will transfer our own love because we're in that state of consciousness with whatever actions, teachings, rhythmic exercises to heal. And it goes out like you mentioned earlier. It is an automatic activation. And so love is the power. This is a great, great gift to us.
And it reminds me, there is a tribe in Africa called the Bamemba tribe, where when someone does something wrong, steals or whatever they do that's wrong, they put that person in the center of the entire tribe. They sit around in a circle, and everyone tells that person all the good things that they are and that they've done.
Wow.
Until they feel complete. So, and then they bring the person back into the tribe, feeling loved.
Yes.
And
yes,
that we could do this for many people before they actually take that negative action.
Yeah, it is. It is so profound. It is so powerful. And maybe even after it, bully somebody, we make sure that that person knows that bullying is not acceptable. But then, you know, so we teach right and wrong. And then if we added something like what you just suggested, can you imagine the tears that would flow? Can you imagine the impression it would make on children who have been wounded? And I believe any age, if we really are feeling unconditional love, if we really are being loved, no matter what we've done, we're not going to be motivated to keep doing something harmful. It's impossible. If we really feel that love, it's impossible to hurt another.
Absolutely. I almost have tears as you're talking. So please tell us how people can get your book, get your app, the Heart Plus app, and maybe contact you.
Sure. There's a website, and we're so excited that we got this website, loveisthepower.com. Loveisthepower.com. You can get my book there, which is also called Love is the Power. And the love that I'm talking about is what we're talking about here. This isn't a, you know, how to get a girlfriend or boyfriend book, but Love is the Power is on that website. And also there's an app that you can get for your cell phone. Remember I mentioned that when I was coming back from my near-death experience, I saw a bunch of symbols and mandalas. I began to research the history of those mandalas, and I found them in the ancient art of different indigenous societies. And it's a fascinating story. So I write about those symbols. I also worked with Dr. William Tiller, Professor William Tiller, who was the chairman of the Department of Material Sciences and taught crystallography and was an expert in crystals at Stanford University. Very, very smart guy. And we worked with ratios of energy, and we worked with field generators, and we came up with a technology that, again, to make a long story short, it took a long time, is available on any cell phone. That's called the Heart Plus app. The Heart, H-E-R-T, in the plus sign, app. If you go to the website, loveisthepower.com, you can scroll down. You'll see that you can go right to Google or to the Apple Store, the App Store, and download. It's, I think it costs $1.95, one-time fee, forever. And your phone, then, once the app is turned on, becomes a carrier wave for natural frequencies, for these same energies that are found throughout nature. And there's 108 of them. There's 108 natural frequencies that are the basis of life during this time of Earth. And if you can just imagine yourself in a beautiful place without concrete and without all the different electronic and stuff, maybe Hawaii or up in the mountains or, you know, in some natural beauty, those frequencies are everywhere present. It's just that they become inhibited because of unnatural plastics and all kinds of things that are of different frequencies. So the app then begins to activate it, broadcast and activate those natural frequencies. So you can actually use something that in and of itself might be harmful, and I can't talk too much about that, about the cell phones. But we all know
This is possible. Very possible that this can help to heal or suppress those other frequencies.
Yeah, it's like if you're going to use a cell phone, better to use it walking along the beach in Hawaii than it is in a crowded office building. So you can't walk by the beach all the time, but you can use this app, which has the same frequencies. So that's the point there.
Wonderful. We have to stop this ending right now. So thank you so much for this powerful interview. And I look forward to speaking to you again, possibly doing a webinar or something together.
I would love to do that, Dr. Erica. It's been an honor to be on your show. Like I said earlier, you're doing very important work, so valuable for this point in history. So it's been an honor. Thank you.
Thank you so much.